Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show. Sorry, I'm a little bit verklempt. It took me a little bit of time to get here because of the fires surrounding LA. So I just want to take a moment to thank all the firefighters who are working so hard to protect us. We are in a circle of fire that is surrounding LA right now. In fact, I'm looking out the studio here at LA Talk Radio, and there is just a blanket of smoke on the horizon and also behind us. So to everyone who's impacted by these fires, to those of you who have to evacuate, our thoughts are with you. And again, huge thanks to the firefighters. Okay, so now switching gears to the fires within, I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in food, weight, and body image issues, and I'm here to help you lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. If you'd like to call in and talk with me, the call-in number is 818-602-4929. Again, 818-602-4929. I can only take one caller at a time, so be sure to call me when I'm not talking to somebody else. But keep trying, because I really do want to hear from you. So today, we're going to talk about how to get through the holidays without gaining weight. Most people I talk to are worried about gaining weight over the holiday season, and they have reason to be. Here's the bad news. Studies show that if you gain weight over the holidays, you tend not to lose it in January. Despite your good intentions, your commitment to being healthy, the statistics are not in your favor. So the chances are high that your New Year's diet will not work. Bummer! But you know what? There is good news, because mostly there's good news. It does not have to be that way. You really can survive the holidays without gaining weight. You could even lose weight. So I'm going to tell you how to break this holiday weight gain cycle. First, I'm going to explain why diets don't work, especially dieting during the holidays. It's a very bad idea. And then I'm going to give you some strategies, the exact strategies you need to make it through this time without gaining weight. Okay, so first thing you got to do is you got to ditch dieting, because dieting over the holidays or dieting ever does not work in the long run, and it will backfire. And here's why. Diets fail because on some level they are about deprivation, and that nearly always leads to overeating or binging. That's because the anticipation of not being able to eat what you want will make you want it more. And if you're thinking all the time about not eating pumpkin pie or Christmas cookies, then you've got pie and cookies on your mind all day. And that puts the focus on the wrong thing, which is what you're eating instead of why. But ultimately, diets fail because they only deal with food. They do not address the underlying reasons that make you turn to food in the first place. And there are many, 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 many reasons why that could happen. You could eat for comfort. You could eat for distraction, to numb yourself against difficult feelings, to, you know, symbolically fill a void. So many reasons. But, you know, most importantly, dieting keeps you in a perpetual battle with yourself. You're always at war with yourself and your body if you're on a diet. So the key to change is to stop dieting and start tuning in to what's eating at you. And when you deal with those true underlying root problems, you won't use food to cope. You won't use food as a distraction. So, by the way, a few years ago, some researchers did a study, and they were trying to prove that food is an addictive substance. because that's what people say all the time. I'm addicted to sugar. I'm addicted to carbs. I'm an addict. I can't stop myself. So in this study, they were going to prove that food is an addictive substance. And they had their research subjects, they had them eat their forbidden foods as part of their treatment. So the premise was people would not be able to stop eating these foods that were on their forbidden list, because these foods were not broccoli. No, no. These foods were like, you know, sugar-laden fat, cookies, cupcakes, pizza, whatever it was. So they figured people just, once they started, they'd find it very difficult to stop. But guess what? Something else happened. When they were given permission to eat these so-called addictive foods, the people in the study ate less, not more. They did the opposite of what food addiction theorists had expected. Since these people had no expectation of deprivation, they were being told they had to eat this, they ate what they wanted. They didn't have to make up for some expected or experienced restriction or deprivation. So when you allow yourself to have something, you can decide whether you want it or not, or you can decide how much of it you want. So if you say, oh, if I'm in the mood for, you know, cookies, have a couple of cookies, and you're like, oh, those were good. But if you're like, I shouldn't eat those cookies. No, I can't eat those cookies. I can't. Okay, I'm going to have one. And then you have it, and then it's like, oh, I've had one, I might as well have two. And then before you know it, you've had the whole carton of cookies or box of cookies or whatever or something, just too many cookies, and you tell yourself you have no control over cookies. But if you had just said, I feel like having cookies, I'm going to have a couple or three or whatever, depending on their size, then it's satisfying, and then you don't have that like emotional element, that sense of I've blown it, so I might as well blow it big, and then I'm never going to eat cookies again. Anyway, so this is actually the way naturally thin people stay thin. I don't know if you've noticed how non-dieting thin people, non-dieting underscore boldface, non-dieting thin people order whatever they want at restaurants. Sometimes they don't even finish what they're eating. Sometimes they do. Again, it's because there's no anticipation of deprivation. So this holiday season, the first thing to do is give yourself permission to ditch dieting. Now, when I make this suggestion to the patients in my private practice, they initially get really anxious, and they imagine they're just going to keep gaining weight. One woman, she told me, she's like, remember in the Willy Wonka movie when Veruca Salt turns into a giant blueberry? That's going to be me. She said, if I start eating, I'll never stop. And that's what lots of people tell me, that I'll double my weight by New Year's if I don't stick to a diet. But keep in mind, fears are not facts. The fact is, this has never happened to anyone who gave up dieting. Instead, they found that, like the people in the research study, when they gave themselves permission to eat what they wanted, they inevitably ended up eating less. Pretty cool, right? So, number one way to not gain weight over the holiday season is to not be on a diet over the holiday season. If you have any questions, please feel free to call me. I'd love to talk with you. 818-602-4929 is the number. Okay, so the next thing you're going to do is figure out what's eating at you instead of focusing on what you're eating. Now, most people are familiar with emotional eating. You're probably familiar with emotional eating. They're aware that it is not what they're eating that's the true problem. Some of them think it's food is the problem. But for some people, no. Hey, I know food is not the problem, but I don't know what the problem is. They just have this sort of vague sense of, I'm going to use food in this way, but they don't know why. So if you look at food as the problem, it's like thinking that you can get rid of a weed by just pulling it. Every gardener knows if you pull a weed, it's going to grow back. You don't even have to be a gardener to know that. So to get rid of the weed for good, you have to get to that root. And similarly, with weight and food issues, you've got to get to that that root issue, that core problem that's leading to whatever's going on with food. So often people get so good at turning to food to cope with distress or anxiety or anything that's uncomfortable, they can't figure out what is actually bothering them. And that's why I developed a formula to help you identify the real trigger. Because often what you may think of as a trigger food is actually pointing to the true trigger, which is an underlying emotion, need, or conflict. So the formula for figuring out what's eating at you is tying certain types of foods to certain types of moods. That's why I call it the food mood formula. Not very creative, but it sort of says it all. Okay, so the first category is creamy. So foods that are sweet, smooth, and creamy, like ice cream, frozen yogurt, pudding, those suggest a longing for comfort, for soothing, and nurturing. So if ice cream is your go-to food, you're going to need to find a new way to comfort yourself, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later. Basically, we want to have comfort words instead of comfort food. So the second category are filling foods. So foods that are, you know, bulky, like breads, pasta, cake, pizza, they're correlated to loneliness since they are bulky and they symbolically fill that internal void. So if you crave those kinds of filling foods, that can be a clue that you're feeling deprived or lonely or empty in some way, and you're using food to symbolically fill up. So you want to look at, what are the holes in your life? What are the holes in your soul? I know it's hard to think about, but it's so important, because there is a reason that you're turning to food. And that reason is not that you are addicted to it or that you have no control or you have no willpower. You're trying to solve a problem, but you're trying to solve a problem in a way that ultimately hurts you instead of helps you. So the more that you can figure out why you're doing what you're doing, then you can find new ways to resolve that. So if this filling food, if that resonates with you, really think about what's missing in your life. What are you deprived of? What are those empty spaces in your psyche? And how else can you be fulfilled in your life aside from with food? The last category is crunchy. So foods that are crunchy, think chips, pretzels, anything with a crunch, with a bite, those are associated with anger. So if crunchy foods are the ones you turn to most, you may be angry, frustrated, annoyed, anxious, something like that. And maybe you're taking out those angry feelings on yourself instead of directing them toward the people or situations that are actually causing you to be upset. So as you can see, if you think you are triggered by food, think again. You are actually being triggered by an emotional need or conflict. And identifying what is bothering you, that is the first step to changing your relationship to food. Once you know what is bothering you, you can start responding differently to yourself. And again, I'm going to give you some very specific guidelines on how to do that in a little bit. All right, the third principle for how to get through the holidays without gaining weight is to take it a day or a meal at a time. So the holiday season stretches from Halloween through New Year's. And 2 months seems like a really long time to be quote-unquote good for the holidays. So what may seem like several weeks can actually be condensed to only a few days of actually celebrating. And chances are you only participate in some of these holiday events. So in October, we have Halloween. November's Thanksgiving. December is, you know, Christmas Eve, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and then New Year's Eve. I'm sure there's something that I'm missing, and if so, you know, I apologize. Please feel free to let me know what other holidays that I might be missing in there. But those are the ones that I could think of. And if you think about which of those holidays you participate in, that adds up to only a handful of days at the most, rather than weeks. So take it one holiday day at a time. And by the way, if you skip breakfast or lunch or both, thinking you're going to go to a holiday party, so you're just kind of saving yourself up, you are setting yourself up to overeat or binge. That's because when you're super hungry, you're more likely to lose control once you actually start eating. Make sure you eat enough before you go to a party or to a special occasion, because if you're really hungry or feel like you are starving, it's difficult to stop yourself from making poor choices it's hard to stop eating too much when you're that hungry, no matter what your relationship is with food. Okay, so the next principle is how to take care of you over the holidays. But again, I want to invite any of you who are listening to join me. Let me know if there's anything on your mind aside from this subject. It could be anything food weight related, anything that you're struggling with. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Okay, so how to take care of you over the holidays. First of all, you got to be a friend to yourself. Now, recently, one of my patients, I'll call her Kayla, she confessed to eating endless bowls of ice cream after a painful breakup. And she said, "I can't believe I did that. Can't believe it. I should be over it already. What's my problem?" I asked what she would tell a friend who had comforted herself with ice cream after a bad breakup. And Kayla said, "Oh, I'd tell her I was really sorry. She was going through a tough time. And I'd ask her how could I help? And, you know, I'd really be there for her." So I said, "Oh, so you would not shove a carton of ice cream into your friend's hands and say, 'Here, have this.'" And she looked absolutely horrified. And she said, "Oh, no, I would never do such a thing. Never, ever." And yet, that is exactly what she did to herself, followed by self-recrimination. So if a friend had eaten ice cream, she would not have said, "What's wrong with you? Get over it already." She would not have said, "You're so disgusting." These are all the things that she said about herself. Oh, hold that thought. I have a caller. Hello, caller Nick. How are you?
Fine. I'm glad you got in safe. In California, it's terrible. These fires.
Yeah, it's.
So let me ask you this: I go through a day, or some days, where I have a problem with ice cream, thinking about ice cream, breads, all three of the things that you mentioned, and you know. I don't, and then you talked about, you know, you think about things but you don't do anything with it. But then you're frustrated that you didn't do it. Maybe on the holidays or whatever, you don't do it. So that frustration of ice cream, I don't eat ice cream. It's funny. The only little bit of ice cream I had, and it was a little bit, was on Thanksgiving. And I really enjoyed it, but you know, I think about it all the time, but I don't eat it, and that's frustrating to me. And the other thing is too, it all makes sense to me. The last one with the sprinkles and things like that on stuff. Sometimes you just can't avoid it. So those three things that you mentioned are I can have all of them in one day, and be frustrating to me. I could eat them, but I don't eat them.
Well, I just want to add one thing, Nick, that when I'm talking about these three types of foods or three categories of foods, there's nothing inherently wrong with having any of them. It's just when you're motivated to change the way you feel by eating them, that it's the problem. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying, that was a good meal, I'll have some ice cream for dessert. That's not the same as, oh, I feel really bad, I need comfort, I'm going to have ice cream. or okay. I feel lonely. I'm gonna eat a a bunch of muffins or whatever. Or I'm pissed off. I'm gonna have some Doritos. So I mean, there's nothing inherently. It's not every time that you have these foods that there's something going on psychologically. It's only when you're eating them, trying to change the way that you feel.
All right. Okay. But the three things that they are frustrating there, and they're there every day. But I fight it. But I, as you say, I don't eat them. I avoid them because it's not worth eating them to do what it would do to me.
Okay, so that makes sense. You're saying that you kind of think a step ahead and you say, oh, I feel this and I want to eat that, but I'm not going to because it's not worth it. I'm going to feel so much worse afterwards.
Exactly.
About myself.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think that it would be, which is fine, but you still are not dealing with the reason you want to eat whatever it is that you want to eat. So if you could say, I feel this way. I want to eat ice cream, but I'm not because I'm going to feel so much worse afterwards. But let me deal with what I'm feeling. What's going on with me? You know, my favorite expression: be curious, not critical.
Exactly.
So what?
Exactly. So it's all right. If once in I don't know how 3 weeks, let's say, listen, I'm going to have a little dessert. I'm going to have ice cream, or a yogurt, let's say, and enjoy it. But what I don't want to do is buy a half gallon of ice cream and have it in the house.
Because?
I'll eat it. If it's here, I'll eat it. And I don't want to eat it. And I just don't know. I really have to trust myself. If it's there, I'll have it. If I have some ice cream out or something, that'll satisfy my ice cream. And if I have it in the house, I'll eat. You know, the temptation is there. And that really pushes the feeling about ice cream.
Well, is it a temptation for ice cream, just you can't say no to ice cream, or is it the temptation to use ice cream to avoid or distract or comfort or deal with something going on inside? So Nick, if you were not thinking about ice cream, having it, not having it, what? Oh, you're reading my mind. Yes.
That's right. What would I be thinking?
Yes. This is what happens when you're a longtime listener. You start. I'm in your head now. Yes.
Exactly.
Answer your question.
What would I be thinking about? I don't know what I would be thinking about. I would be, have ice cream, and if I didn't eat it, what would I be thinking about? I can't tell you at the moment.
What in your life? Okay, let's imagine that I just had this, I don't know, did you ever see Star Trek? And wasn't there some trick where they did like this Vulcan mind wipe or something? And they just, Spock like passed his hand over, passed his hand over someone and then they suddenly couldn't think of it. Maybe I'm mixed up with Men in Black. Okay, so let's pretend I have dark sunglasses on and I'm like the third part of Men in Black, Woman in Black. And I say to you, pass my hand over your head and say, you cannot think about ice cream, food, or anything food, weight, body image related. It's out of your head. What would be on your mind? What's bothering you in your life?
Oh, God, well, I don't know. I really can't say, actually.
So there is...
I guess, yeah, there is.
There's something that you can't say that is bothering you.
Yeah.
Okay. but there is something. And so my...
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah. if you're using your relationship to food to distract from your relationship to your problems or your feelings, you know, then that's when food becomes an issue. But when you can face whatever it is, because it's easier to think about ice cream. I'm going to have it. I'm not going to have it. It's in the freezer. Oh, my God, it's calling my name. I'm not going to have it. It's a lot easier to just be kind of obsessive about that than to say, oh, I feel worried about this part of my life, or I'm concerned about this, or I'm angry about that, or mm-hmm. Whatever it is that is going on.
Yeah.
Which is that yes. needs your attention. That's what's eating at you.
Exactly. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your thoughts and for, as always, giving us something to think about. I'm sure that lots of people out there can relate to this. You know, this idea of focusing on food to distract yourself from something else in your life that is painful or difficult or scary to look at. So thanks for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you very much.
And stay safe from the fires.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Nick. Yeah, we can get so used to thinking about food and weight, we just that becomes our primary relationship, right? And because it's something we can ostensibly control, whereas relationships with other people or situations in your life, you know, they're out of our control. So it's not that eating issues are about control, but it can be a way of attempting a sense of mastery over your life. If you can control what you eat, or you can control what you weigh, that feels powerful. And if that's something that you are focusing on, maybe look at where you feel powerless in your life, because whatever is making you feel powerless, that's what's likely making you focus on food, weight, and body image. So I just want to get back to the how to take care of you over the holidays, being a friend to yourself, back to Kayla, is that talk to yourself as you would talk to a friend. You know, Kayla said that she was, she was upset over the breakup and what's my problem and I'm disgusting and all of this stuff. She would never say that to a friend. She would never say, what's your problem? Aren't you over this by now? You know, you're disgusting. So if you are mean to yourself, like Kayla was, you feel terrible. You feel bad. And you might even use food to escape your own mean voice, which is why the way you talk to yourself and about yourself, that can make you either feel good or it can make you feel bad. When you are kind to yourself, when you are supportive, when you are a friend to yourself, you're going to feel better. You're going to feel okay. That's a way of self-soothing, comforting yourself with words. And when that happens, you don't need food for that purpose. Then comfort words take the place of comfort food. And yes, it takes a while. Yes, it's easier said than done. I absolutely get it. If you're thinking that, I'm with you. I understand. But really, like with anything, practice. Practice makes progress. And along with this idea of being a friend to yourself, you also might want to silence your inner critic. So if you have ever said something like this to yourself, and note the way that I'm saying it. If you've ever said, like, you've got no willpower, you're not good enough, you're never going to lose weight, I'm such a loser. Horrible, huh? If any of that sounds familiar, well, welcome to your inner critic. That inner critic is horrible. Oh, hold that thought. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina. Who's this?
Hi, Dr. Nina. It's Brian from Chicago. I called a few weeks ago. Not sure if you remember.
Brian from Chicago, I do remember. It was something about, yes, something about your father and, again, having mastery over your body and having to earn, it was having to earn the right to eat. Yes?
That's right. That's right. Wow. With all your callers, I'm so surprised you remember. Well, thank you so much for making time for me again. It's kind of a related question. Oh, and by the way, I'm really enjoying your book, so thank you so much for writing that. I found it really helpful. My question is, you know, with the holidays coming up, and the call I had last time was really about this balancing act that I find myself doing, where I sort of don't allow myself to eat in a normal way unless I get to work out. And with the holidays coming up, you know, a lot of things are closed. So the gym I go to is closed, and other things I like to do physically are unavailable. So I'm just wondering if you have any advice on how to navigate the holidays from an eating perspective when, you know, your schedule gets disrupted and that kind of disrupts how you see yourself a little bit.
Well, what if you just said it disrupts how you see yourself? What if you said that again and said it disrupts how I see myself? Like,
okay,
indulge me. Say it out loud.
How I see myself. Okay, if it disrupts how I see myself in terms of my inability to get to the gym, so I get a little bit triggered the way I talked about before, that I begin to feel guilty for eating because I don't feel like I'm sort of earning the right to eat because I'm not working out the way I'd like to.
So the reason I had you change your language a little bit was you talking about yourself in second person is a little bit distancing. But when you say it affects how I see myself, it's more internal instead of externalized. So how do you see yourself? What's different? What do you fear would be different?
If I don't get to... Sorry, go ahead.
No, what if you didn't work out? I mean, what we're talking about, like, you can't work out on... How many days is this that the gym is closed?
Probably like four.
4 days over a period of...
I guess, what, 2 weeks, I guess that would be?
Uh-huh. And so what do you imagine is going to happen if you can't do your normal workout? Like, how do you start seeing yourself differently?
I recognize that that's a short time in which to worry about anything like weight gain or loss of progress, but it's more the feeling that I don't, I feel sort of sedentary if I'm not working out at least once every couple of days. And so it's more about holding off that feeling rather than, you know, literally being worried about how I'm physically going to look or how I'm physically going to weigh.
And what does sedentary get associated with?
Well, I'm not sure if you remember, but I associated with my dad, who was a very sedentary person. And so I begin to identify feelings along the lines of the way he probably felt, which was just sort of a little bit down, not really motivated, just kind of lazing on the couch because he's unhappy. And so I begin to associate it with that.
So you might have a bit of a black and white perspective that as long as you are going to the gym regularly every couple of days and all of that, that you can tell yourself you're not like your father. Because you're not only describing you're not only describing his level of activity, you're also describing kind of an attitude of
right.
of passivity.
And that's true.
So that by all of this working out, you're protecting yourself from feeling his passivity, perhaps feeling his whatever you associate with his attitude. So it's mm-hmm. beyond physical. It almost becomes characterological. Like in your life.
Characterological.
Oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. You know what? It's the problem being a psychoanalyst. Sometimes I just use way too much big words. So I'm sorry. Let me say that again. Character issue. You know, it's not really a physical issue. It becomes a character issue or like your a personality issue.
So what's the best way to kind of approach that to try to make my approach to it a healthier one?
Well, Brian, it seems that you're investing a lot of energy to convince yourself you're not your dad at times.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that whatever, and I recall kind of making this recommendation or talking about this the last time you called. I think that resolving your relationship with him, and I think you said he's no longer with us, if I recall that
That's
correctly.
That's true. Good memory.
Mm-hmm. Ask me what I did yesterday. I have no idea, but for some reason I can remember what people tell me.
I'm the same. I get that.
So I think that resolving that relationship with your father, that because every boy ideally wants to be like his father, wants to look up to his father, wants to have his father be that, you know, kind of on a pedestal. But when you have, and eventually you come to terms with the fact that your father is, you know, not God and is a flawed human being, but overall still having a level of respect. That's ideal for the way, especially boys, to see their fathers. But when you have a father where you can't do that, it can be, then where's your role model? So there can be feelings about the fact that you didn't have a father you could look up to in that way, and so that if you resolve the relationship with your father or your thoughts about your father, your disappointment in your father, perhaps, then you don't have to keep proving that you're not him.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. So when you have a father that you need to resolve things with, but the father's not around, what would be my best way? Is that a therapy issue, or what's really the best way when there's that person's not there for you to talk it out with?
Well, yeah, I mean, ideally a therapy issue. It could be a therapy issue, or even there are a lot of books of dealing with disappointment mm-hmm. with your parents and all of that, because you could work through a relationship even with a living person who doesn't talk to you or is incapable of talking. Like, the person does not have to be alive for you to, even if your dad was around, I wouldn't be saying, hey, Brian, go talk to your dad about you know, your relationship and how he's disappointed you. That wouldn't help anybody. And it's because mm-hmm. it's about you. It's really not about him. It's about how you have internalized him, or what you have thought of him, or what you, or your conflict about him. Something. I mean, I don't know specifically, but you don't need the other person to resolve a relationship. That person could be living or not, but it's about what you know. How did having this kind of couch potato father influence you? How did it affect you? How did it affect your ideas about what it is to be a guy, a man? You know, how is this proving that you're not him affected other areas of your life?
Right.
I'm guessing it's not just with working out and eating.
Oh, definitely not. I mean, I can tell that it sort of permeates other areas as well, but that's the one I'm sort of most aware of at this moment.
Right. And it might serve you well also. Like, sometimes when people are motivated to be different than a slothful parent, they do really mm-hmm. well, and they achieve, and, you know, I mean, it has its benefits too. But when it comes to this working out piece, it's taking up too much mental space and energy, because it's almost like you can't accept that you're not him. You have to keep proving you're not him, or you're not going to turn into him.
Right, right. That's true. It definitely takes up a good deal of emotional energy. I've noticed that.
Right. So just kind of trust that your choices to work out are ingrained and they're there, and you're good at taking care of yourself physically and all of that, but do it because you want to be healthy and you want to take care of your body, not because you're trying to prove you're not him.
Well, I will try that. I will look into it, and if it's okay with you, I'll call you back and just kind of let you know how I'm going.
I would love you to call back. So, absolutely. Thanks for calling again.
Okay.
You always have some very interesting questions, and I look forward to the next time.
Thanks so much, Dr. Nina. Take care.
Bye. Interesting. Yeah, so often we find ourselves doing things for reasons we may not even understand why we're doing it. It just becomes so natural and ingrained. Then you break it down and you realize why you're doing what you're doing. Then you can change. Here's another caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina. What's your name?
Hey, Nina. This is Anne from New York. How are you?
Hi, Anne from New York. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I have one success story to share with you and one question to ask you.
Well, let's hear the
success. Okay.
Absolutely. Success story. Please bring it.
Well, I had to tell you because you're the one who got me started on this whole journey, really. So I called several weeks ago, and we were talking about how self-acceptance is different than self-love. And the advice you gave me was to accept myself, just like develop that self-acceptance. And so we kind of talked about like looking in your eyes, like in the mirror, and saying, I accept you, and then like just doing it full-blown naked. And I did it, and I like just had a really beautiful experience where I just felt like I could accept all of myself. Anyways, I had a harder weekend, and just like wasn't feeling really great about myself, and was feeling probably kind of like how Brian from Chicago feels if he doesn't go to the gym. I hadn't like gone to the gym in a few days and just like wasn't feeling really good. And so that's how I woke up on Monday. And, but instead of getting down on myself, I thought, okay, this is like my chance to like accept myself even when I don't feel good. My thought was like, it's one thing to accept myself when I look great and I have a full face of makeup on and I'm ready to go out and like, you know, I've done everything I want to do to look fantastic. And it's another thing to accept myself on a Monday morning when I don't feel great. And if I can accept myself in this moment, like, that's when the real power is, right?
Absolutely.
So, it was just this really beautiful moment where I just decided, like, I am going to accept myself, like, right now in this moment. You know, like, legs unshaved, makeup not on, whatever, in my pajamas, and I'm just going to, like, accept myself for who I am right now. And, it was just, like, this really cool moment.
It sounds empowering.
Yeah, it felt really nice. And it's kind of got me started to think about, again, this week, like, this idea of, like, self-acceptance, and as I've been paying attention to my thoughts over the last few days, I've noticed, like, it's still kind of conditional. Like, my brain still wants me to believe that I can accept myself more, like, if I don't diet, but if I do better at intuitive eating, you know, or I'll accept myself more if, like, I go to the gym or whatever it is. And so I just wanted to, I wanted to ask you if you had any advice, like level 2 steps for self-acceptance. Like, what what I would need to do next in order to feel a greater sense of acceptance of myself, like, daily, more unconsciously, I guess.
I'm wondering, when you got your report card, and I'm just making this up, you got four A's and a B. What?
I'm a pretty A-minus? Straight A student, Nina.
But let's say, like, back in the day when you were eight, you got, you know, four A's and an A minus.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know what report card you're talking about.
Everyone got that report card, right? I got a C, and I got, like, straight A's, and then I got a C in attitude because my school graded you on attitude, and I got a C in attitude in science. And by the way, my science teacher.
Were you a little sassy?
I don't think so. I think I was curious. I maintain curiosity, but. Oh my God! It was like, what about, why is a C? What about the C? What's up with the C? We don't get C's. Our family doesn't get C's. How could you get a C? This is unacceptable. So I don't know. I'm kind of vibing with you. I'm kind of thinking maybe that's you too. So
yes,
right. So
yeah.
So there's this always going to the next thing, and I think I talked with you about this, the metaphorical ladder. Did I tell you about the metaphorical? Whether I did or didn't, I'm going to say it again.
Say it again.
Too often, we get in this mode where we're looking up. We're going to the next thing. What's next? What's next? What's next? How can I do that better? How can I have more of that? All of that. I think that's what you're saying. You're just trying to constantly improve upon yourself, which there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're always looking at what's next, you're never in your life. So, metaphorical ladder. You want to look down and say, oh, I was at that rung way down there, and look how far up I have climbed. I've done really well. I'm proud of myself. Back then, I thought I had to be perfect to be acceptable, and now I can be perfectly imperfect and be acceptable. And look at all the changes I've made in my life and my relationship to myself. And then you say, and here's the rung of the ladder that I'm on. Pretty cool. Here I am. Let me see what everything is like today. In this moment, this day, this hour, this second, how can I appreciate my life as it is, balanced with, and I want to get up there. I want to climb. So when you balance, you know, the past and how far you've come, with where you want to go and where you are, it's going to be much more satisfying. If you're constantly trying to improve, only focusing on the improvements, you never feel good enough. And that leaves an emptiness in your soul.
Yeah, I love that idea. And I think you just helped me understand, like, what my, like, deepest question with this is I feel like I have so few models, you being one of them, but I'm struggling to come up with other people on the spot right now.
Aww.
Who model self-acceptance. And, you know, because, like, the whole world teaches girls and women that they have to look a certain way and be a certain way. I mean, boys too. This is not a gender issue. You know, there's masculine and feminine archetypes almost that we're told we have to reach. And so I'm struggling to know, like I want to be self-accepting, but I don't really know what that looks like because I'm not seeing it modeled. So I'm struggling to know, like, how to actually do that because I have no one to follow.
Well, I think you make a very good point. And by the way, I'm very flattered that I would be, you know, someone that you consider a role model. I am very
Probably.
Admittedly imperfect. And I accept that while I'm trying to change. So I think that you find what you look for. So if you look out in the world for the people you know or public figure type people, and you look for people who embrace that level of self-acceptance that you're talking about, you'll find them. But you won't You won't find it in magazines. You probably won't find it much on Facebook or Instagram. And you have to be careful about who you follow, because you can get very, very influenced by some of the, the perfection that you may see on social media. And just to really look at who is the whole person, and what about that person do you respect? Is it that they do perfectly all the time? No. Is it that they keep trying to improve themselves? Yes. So if you accept and appreciate those qualities, for example, in other people, that will help you accept it within yourself.
So you're saying, like, learn how to label the things that you respect in people and that you like in people, so that you can model those yourself, so that I can model those myself.
And search them out. Yeah. Search them out. Like you say, you don't know a lot of people who are models, but role models, but they're out there. And if you look for them, knowing what you're looking for, you're going to find them. And then you'll have that model, and you'll have it in front of you, but you'll also be able to integrate it and do it for yourself.
And yeah, I like that, because it kind of forces me to know what I'm looking for, right?
Exactly. And when we know what we're looking for, we can find it. So, Anne, thank you so much for calling. I think that
thanks, Nina.
That you're very welcome. Please call back as always and let me know how you're doing.
Sounds good. Have a good day.
You too. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio to give you the skinny on weight loss without dieting. Visit me at winthedietwar.com or find out about my online program at kickthediethabit.com. I'd love to hear from you, so send me a message on Twitter or Facebook, or email me or call me with any questions you'd like to cover on the show. See you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.